On the Plank. The great ever-to-be-remembered feature of a trip to Lake George is the stage ride, affording, as it does, an inexhaustible subject for conversation and food for afterthought, fresh air, sunshine, and an uncommonly fine opportunity for the study of character. This line is one of the finest in the country. The stages of the kind called Concord, like the horses, are always in good order, carrying from 25 to 30 passengers, besides a small truckload of baggage, and making the trip in about an hour and a quarter. The outside seats are, of course, the favorite, affording the best view of the country as they go swinging along, and sometimes it happens that all want to sit there, when, like some poorly ballasted ship, with all on deck and nothing in the hold, they go with just enough of the spice of danger about the position to make it interesting. Their safety resting in the sure eye and steady hand of the one who guides the horses. For a little veering off from the narrow plank in some places might cause a hasty unloading of all. Therefore, only tried and trusty men are employed as drivers. And bless you, don't they know and feel their importance? Only equaled by a country undertaker conducting a first-class funeral. Before the route was as well known as at present, many a purse of $2 to $3 has been made up and given to the driver to repay him for the extra danger and labor of driving round by Bloody Pond and William's Monument. And now, although against the rules for one to pass another, it sometimes happens that the driver of a rear coach will drop a word that leads the passengers to think that he might be induced to pass the leading ones and let them try the dust a while. Soon an inducement is made up and reluctantly accepted by Jehu, when, curiously enough, something is very apt to happen to the leading coach that necessitates a stop, and the rear one goes on. The thing is success, but somehow you feel like the Irishman who shot the bird, and then bewailed the loss of the ammunition, as the fall itself would have killed it. But be satisfied that if the purse had not been tendered, no accident would have happened to the leaders. Verily, telegraphy is a great science, and not confined entirely to wires either. And so it happened that on a bright day in the summer of 72, with a gay party of pleasure seekers, we found ourselves perched on top of one of these stages, drawn by four spirited horses and conducted by that autocrat of the road, the festive stage driver. We had the usual assortment in our load, the Cockney Englishman, with notebook in hand, making all sorts of inquiries about everything to write "Home to the Old Country." The patrician young lady with eyeglasses, who impressed one with the idea that she looks as a gunner would fire a bombshell at such an angle as would best annihilate you when it descended. The young ladies, to whom everything was so nice and jolly. The aristocratic and high-toned young clerk, in faultless kids and paper cuffs, whose letters for a month past had come addressed to him at the Fort William Henry, where he was going to spend his year's salary in 2 weeks of first-class bliss. The uncomfortable-looking but proud mother, who, at the risk of her life, would persist in staying where she could admire her precocious offspring, just budding into delicate mustachehood, right from college and consequently qualified and perfectly willing to tell everybody all about everything. The timid gentleman, with linen duster buttoned close up under the chin, hat planted on the back of his head, teeth tightly shut together, and hands frantically clutching the railing of the coach as it swayed from side to side, the very picture of determination not to fall off, and with a large sort of grin on his phiz, as though he imagined he was making a heroic stand for life, while all the world gazed in wondering admiration and trembled for the result. There was also the ancient victim of a young wife, who could see nothing but damned nonsense in being jerked all over the country in all sorts of infernal machines and at all hours of the day and night. These and more. But the life of the party was my friend, dry, droll Jack A., who goes with us and to whom I am indebted for much that is interesting in the following pages. As bows the stately goose to enter a 16-foot barn door, so ducked we as we passed under the toll gate, then leaving the fairgrounds, where moral individuals who wouldn't be seen at a race course attended the agricultural horse show. On the left crossed the old halfway brook and rumbling along the plain toiled up the long hill. Pausing a moment on the summit, looked back down the road to the village, nearly 3 miles distant, over farms and wood and fields of waving grain spread out beyond us, while away in the east, the mountains of Vermont rose up blue and beautiful in the morning light, then descended into the valley toward the north. As the horses came down to a walk at the foot of the hill on the further side, 3 or 4 ragged little boys dashed out from the corners of the fence, where they had laid for us, and ran along by our side, while propelled from their hands bunches of beautiful white pond lilies, the most fragrant of all our northern flowers, shot upward, and describing circles in the air, descended among us in a shower of sweetness. With ruddy cheeks, their eyes glancing eagerly from one to another of the passengers, and with rimless hats held invitingly up for stamps, these grinning little chaps bobbed and danced along by our side until satisfied that they had secured all the plunder. Then retired in good order to lay in wait for the next vehicle that should chance to come along. Their lilies come mostly from the marsh on the west of the road, the business being in the hands of 2, who claim the hills on either side as their territory, by right of discovery and of originating the scheme. Imitating the old knights of the road, they wait for the coaches where the nature of the ground compels them to go slow. Then, by a judicious cannonade of flowers, compel a surrender of stamps. In this way, having picked up over $600 in one season. At our right is the Albany Peat Works, which must have been a paying investment to the originators of the scheme, who sold more shares than peat, until the impression went out that shares was all they ever expected to sell, which naturally hurt the business some. Then a twin enterprise was started in the mountain about 2 miles to the northwest, the Corning Iron Mine, which was conceived and conducted by the same gigantic intellect. And now stock in that great company is considered good at present, quotations, as there isn't a chance for it to fall much lower. The strip of still water along the north side of the marsh is a branch of Long Pond, which may be seen some distance away toward the east.